Hi, thanks for coming. It was nice of Craig and Shannon to invite me. I love this Texas weather in the springtime compared to Chicago. Everything's nice and green here. Chicago, everything's brown, except for the river, it's green. But I don't have a speech prepared because I don't like talking. But I brought I scanned in a lot of photographs that I've taken over the years, and most of these photographs nobody's ever seen before, so I hope it's interesting for you. I just want this to be very informal. If you have a question or you want to know something, just blurt it out, and if I can remember, I'll try to answer it. So, I went to Ohio State University, majored in product design, and in my senior year, I enjoyed playing pinball, and I wanted to design a futuristic pinball cabinet. So for one of my projects, when I was second quarter as a senior, I designed a really futuristic pinball machine that had a lot of interesting features. Here's some of my early sketches. But at the time, all pinball games had LED score displays. This was in the early 80s. But they were all over the back glass, just like where the mechanical reels used to be. And my thinking was it would be better if it was all in an area at the bottom where it would be easier for players to see their score while they're playing so you know what's going on. And then also at that time, games all had the speakers with the sound pointing towards the bottom, and I drew my speakers up. I put my speakers in that area pointing right at the players, and I experimented with different pedestal designs. And this is one of my final quick sketches. This cabinet was designed to be made of fiberglass. So that was my drawing. Then I built a quarter scale model out of acrylic and plexiglass and other materials I had laying around. I got an A on the project, but I haven't been able to find the model for the last 3 months, so I don't know what I've done with it, or I would have brought it for you to look at. But it had, the play field was about 3 or 4 inches lower than the standard game is, but the handles, I was experimenting with different kinds of handles, and you can see probably where I started getting my idea for Demolition Man control handles. But I wanted to keep the flipper button level at the same height as a current game, to keep the play field lower so it'd be easier for little kids to play if they were ever interested in playing pinball anymore. And the play field, the display was in this area, the speakers were in this area. In college, nobody knew much about pinball. My design professors didn't, and they liked this short back box, but none of the pinball people liked that because they all liked the big artwork. So I had to have back surgery after this quarter, I couldn't go back to my design courses, so I thought, I'm going to build a full-size version of this and take it to Bally and see what happens. And I only have one picture. It's not a very clear picture. But I built a full-size version. I didn't have the handles done yet, and just mocked up the playfield area and the score area, and some poster I had, I put in here. But I took this to Schaefer Distributing in Columbus, Ohio, and that's where I took the pictures. They thought it was pretty cool. Oh, thank you. And so they suggested I take it to Bally. Chuck Farmer was president of Bally Pinball Division at the time, and he had formerly been president of Schaefer Distributing. So I took it up there. I took this to Bally, and that's how I got hired and got started at Bally. And then I got laid off a year later. So, this young skinny guy is, that's like the first cabinet I did at Bally. I wasn't a game designer, I was just a cabinet designer. Maybe some of you know that Bally had experimented with a fiberglass cabinet during the KISS pinball, and they had a KISS cabinet, and it was, but it didn't. It was too expensive, and the way the legs mounted, the legs broke, and so Bally was totally against fiberglass. So I did the best I could making it out of flat wood. Anyway, this turned into Rapid Fire and 8 Ball Deluxe Limited Edition, and a version of it was Mr. and Mrs. Pac-Man too. This is George Christian, who designed, I think he did 8 Ball, the first 8 Ball. And that's Norm Clark to the right, and that was my Mr. and Mrs. Pac-Man cabinet design. There were people that were against it because the back glass was smaller, but I just wanted to get a more modern look for pinball because it still hasn't changed in 50 years. I haven't been successful with my cabinet proposal yet. So Bally merged with Midway, and I got laid off. And I didn't know. I tried to get some industrial design jobs for a year, but nothing came up. And Bally Midway was doing pinball games, so I knew a lot of people there, so I thought I'm going to try to get back in there. So at the time, the Rambo movie was popular, and so I went to the recruiting.
Huh? What year was that?
It was before yesterday.
Last century, so.
I don't know. No, no, this was my very first game.
Okay.
Yeah. So what I went to a recruiting station. I got all kinds of brochures on Army Rangers, and I put together just a collage of pictures, and I called the game Ranger, and took it to Bally, and they hired me based on that to design pinball games. But that's because Jim Patlin knew me and Greg Ferris knew me, and they thought I could probably do it. But so this had some innovative stuff on it. I think it was the first game that had a funnel. And my reasoning was, well, the bottle spin around, it resembles helicopter blades. And then a new way to use the memory drop targets so that you could fire a rocket or fire a light with your flipper button and it would knock the drop target down. You could knock the drop target down without using the ball if you earned enough rockets. And then all of my my forest area that I created out of stacked plastics. There's a German brochure that's Special Force Girls because they don't like all the war images in Germany. So that's my second game. This was the hardest game for me to design. Because probably everybody in here, everybody that likes pinball has one good game in them. Because you have all these ideas you want to use, and that's what I had for Special Force. And then I used up everything, and I thought, what the hell am I going to do now? This was very hard. And at this time, Bally's hardware and sound system wasn't all that great, but I put a jukebox in this game because I thought it would be fun to change the music and listen to what you wanted to. But they all sounded pretty bad. This is one of Pat McMahon's early sketches for the game. I think he was in my office one day and we were talking about this. And he was doodling and sketching. He put all these, he was playing. He had, he wrote wolf on here. I crossed it out and wrote bear because to me he looked like a bear. Wolves are skinny, so like a big fat bear. Then he was playing around, drew a hairy navel with hair all over it. We work really hard. I got we take our job seriously. And he's got here, he wrote bulge, like he was going to add that later. But Pat's really good at cartoony kind of stuff and caricature stuff, so he was perfect for this game. And this is the real back glass. So you can see it changed a lot from the original. And we did a version with Dad's Root Beer for more family locations. And here you can see the comparison of the two, how it really changed from his original concept. I still don't know whether that's a bear or a wolf. But the rest of it really changed, except for the boobs on the cat women. They pretty much stayed the same. Blackwater 100, that was my third game. I used to, when I lived in Ohio before I came to Chicago, I used to do a lot of motocross racing and enduro racing. And Steve Ritchie was riding at the same time out in California. And John Yousey, too, was doing a lot of riding in Indiana. No, he was in Ohio at that time, I think. So I thought it would be really fun to do a game based on this Blackwater 100 motorcycle race, which was a horrible, nasty, dirty, ugly race. And it was held in Davis, West Virginia for maybe about 10 years, and then they finally closed it down. Somebody said the environmentalists closed it down, but that land they ran us through was so nasty. I mean, you can't even walk through that stuff. I don't see why anybody would do that. I learned later that one of the main reasons they closed it down was because the spectators and the spectator parties got so out of control that they couldn't handle it anymore in this little town.
Did they give you the concepts, or did you come up with them on?
No, I did it.
You did?
And I had to sell the idea of Blackwater to management. In those days, they let us do pretty much what we wanted to do. Now, Gary, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that. Everything has to be a license. This mountain man is me when I raced in the Blackwater. I thought I looked so good with my hair like that. Didn't we all?
What was the change to the lower cabinet to put a little triangle in it?
Oh, you're talking about the...
Blackwater 100.
Oh, that was one of Patla's brilliant ideas. To save money.
Really?
Yeah. Because you could get more sides per sheet of wood. And it was a terrible idea. Because you had to bolt a piece of wood to the bottom of it to use a, then you couldn't use a pin cart with it. And it didn't last long. Yeah, but that was the reason. Every time you see something really stupid, it's probably to save money. And I put this picture in. This was, when we raced at the Blackwater, it was probably the first 3 years that they had, that they held the race. And I probably went there with, you know, 10 or 12 guys and families went, and we went for 3 or 4 years. And we weren't really racers, we were just participants. This was a 100-mile race through swamps and muck and rock and stuff through West Virginia. This is Mary Lou. She was one of the guy's wives. She was the only one of us for 3 or 4 years that ever won a trophy at the Blackwater. This is a cover of Replay magazine with the whole design team on it. That's Jim Patla, Steve Blackspieler, who's no longer with us, Joe Dillon, who's no longer with us. That's Gary Oglesby in the back. I have no idea what he's doing now. I don't know where he went after Valley Midway closed. Then this is Neil Falconer down here. He did the sounds and the music. And Tony Ramone, who was one of my favorite artists, and he moved back to Italy. This is at the trade show. We gave away, Suzuki provided a ATV for us to give away. We had all these plants and stuff to make it look like a woods and a jungle. We used to spend lots of money in those days. It was fun. This on the left is Mark Hyde. He was the winner of the previous year's Blackwater race. And the guy in the middle is Dave Coombs. He was the race promoter. He's no longer with us. And I still have a couple of those red jerseys, but they don't fit anymore. They shrunk in the closet. It's just another example of the trade show and the lavish sets that we used to make. And that's Mark Hyde signing some flyers. And he signed a lot, so there must be a lot of Blackwater flyers out there somewhere with his signature on them, which I think would be pretty cool to have. I don't think I have one of those. This is interesting because during the show, the whole Williams crew came over to play the game. And you'll recognize some of these people. This is Ward Pemberton on the left. He's most famous for Fathom, I think. Claude Fernandez, he did the original, he did Flash Gordon. And this, who's this? Yes. Steve Ritchie with hair and a beard. This, it's hard to tell, that's Joe Cannon Powell. And this is Pat Lawler, and that's Larry DeMar. I have another shot of this. Here they are from the front. So, Claude Fernandez, Steve Ritchie, Ed Boon, famous for what? Mortal Kombat. Pat Lawler, Ward, and that's Larry. Stand. This was my favorite game up to this point that I did. up to April 1st, it was my favorite game. I hadn't been dirt riding with anybody, and when Valley merged with Williams, that's when I met Steve and Mark Ritchie, and they had been dirt riders previously. So we all got to go. I still had my bike, a 430 Husqvarna, and we went up to somewhere in southern Illinois to ride. And we were having a great time, and we came out of the woods onto this nice dirt road, and I was the last one out, so this is where you get in trouble, is when you show off. And I decided I'm going to pass Mark, and I was in sixth gear, so I must have been doing 60 miles an hour. and I was watching Mark, and I wasn't watching the road, which was really stupid. And I blew past Mark, and the road made a right-angle turn to the right, and I didn't. And I spent 3 months in the hospital with a broken femur, broken ribs, a broken hand, and I'm lucky I survived that. But I had all my gear on, all shoulder pads and helmet, and when I got out of the hospital, they cut my pants and stuff off of me. When I got out of the hospital 3 months later and saw my leathers, I realized exactly what happened, because I remember I hit something with the back wheel. I went over the bars, and I heard a loud noise, and that's all I remember, except I kind of came to, and I was laying there with my leg. I could actually see it was bent in a V shape. And I thought, shit, I'm in trouble now. My wife's really going to be mad. She was. So when I got back home and looked at my pants, there was a huge knobby tire print right here. So what happened was the whole bike came down right on my leg. So the whitewood was essentially done at that point, but it needed a lot of detailing. So a lot of guys at Williams took over and really helped out. Steve Ritchie did some of the work. Jim Patla did some of the work. Mark Ritchie did some of the work until I could get back. And here I am back. That's Tony Pugh on the left. He was the mechanical designer for this game. And that's Mark Panaccio in the middle. He was the programmer. And we're having a team meeting. I'm sitting in my wheelchair. Every day I drove to work. I had a van. I drove to work with my wheelchair in it. And I would park and somebody would have to come out and get my wheelchair, and I had to go up to my office in the freight elevator every day. But I was happy. And there's me motivating the team. The hammer says Pin Lab on it. There's a drill laying on the play field there, but the play field is done. I think that play field has artwork on it. But we have no respect for games when we're working on it. There's Tony's reaction to my motivation. I never thought about documenting this whole design process when I was doing all these games. Like for Special Force, I had no pictures. And I took more pictures for Pirates, but still, when you're there every day and you're working on it every day, you don't think that this is an important step, I should preserve this. And you just do your work every day. So to have some of these pictures is, now they're nice memories. Greg working diligently on the artwork for Elvira and the Party Monsters. I was in Greg's office one day flipping through a comic book. This is before the whole playfield was designed for Elvira and the Party Monsters. And I saw that skull and I thought, oh, that'd be cool to use in an Elvira pinball game. So that was the inspiration for the Skull Cave. And Jack Hager, this was before we did any, I don't know if Williams had done much sculpting before this. We didn't use Jerry Pensler at this time. So Jack Hager, who was a video game designer, he's a pretty talented guy, he sculpted the original clay for this skull. And originally, I wanted to put red eyes in it, because red eyes look cool in skulls. But management was so afraid that we couldn't sell the game in the South because red eyes meant devil. So we had to go with green eyes. I posed for the Wolfman in the back glass. Greg took these pictures. This is the only one I have. It's not the exact pose that he used in the back glass, but that's where that came from. Those aren't my sunglasses. Greg provided those. So that's the final. And these, there's a couple other people in here, I don't know, you probably don't know who, Tim, I don't know either. Tim, he was an artist that Williams finally let go. The only thing I can remember that he did was Transporter, and it was pretty ugly. I don't know if you can remember, it was an ugly monster on Transporter. But he was a good guy. And then the Dracula guy is Jim Patla. If any of you know pictures of him or are familiar with him, it looks pretty much like that. So there's a lot of broken bones drawn in this game because of all my broken bones. So Greg put a lot of broken bones in everywhere. So he called me Nerdman. So there's ribs on the grill and they're Nerdman's broken ribs. Here we are showing off. This is in the factory, I think. I stuck my leg up, so then everybody else stuck their leg up. I'm glad Laura did now that I looked at the picture. So this is Chris Granner. He did the music. He's done a lot of games. He did Whitewater. He recently just left the industry. I think he's going to work for his family, but he's not doing... He did several games for Stern, but he's not doing anymore. That was Laura Rezik. She was our marketing manager. Mark Panacho back there. Me. That's Ron Bolger, who was in sales. Jim Patlin, Tony Pugh, and Greg Ferris. While I was in the hospital, Patlin and Roger Sharp were having fun visiting Elvira in California for the photo shoot for the brochure. So I missed out on that. And we had a press conference right before the AMO trade show where this was introduced, and don't ask me the year. Unless some of you know, you could tell me. So there's me standing there with my leg. Roger Sharp and Elvira. And so we all marched from the press conference that was in a room upstairs down to the exhibit hall. There she's got five security guards. And they were walking really fast, and I was trying to hobble with my cane and my leg. And
they were like, smiling, too.
Yeah, they were smiling. This guy looks like he's going for his gun back here. And there she is signing autographs. We were just amazed at the crowd that people showed up for this to get their autographs with Elvira. The line went all the way around the exhibit for people. Now this is interesting. I didn't even realize this till I scanned in this picture and looked at it. When we were there, the Tokens, the music group, the Tokens that sang "Lion Sleeps Tonight," they were, I think they were performing at the banquet, the MOA banquet dinner, and they were supposed to have their photograph taken with Elvira. And this is them standing right there. I didn't even realize the picture. But the reason I remember it is because they were standing there to get their picture taken behind Elvira, and it was taken at the photographer for some time, and I think this guy right here in the sunglasses says, "Come on, man, this is bullshit." And I was thinking, who are you guys? You're nobody anymore. You got a chance to get your picture taken with some Elvira for publicity, and you're irritated. Another shot of Cassandra. Larry DeMar was up on top of one of the sets taking pictures, and she looked up at him. Never get tired of looking at pictures of Elvira. And my brother was there, and he took a shot, and she looked right at him. She was great to work with. She was just a fun lady, and she's got it nice because she's actually just a little redhead, and so nobody recognizes her when she's not in costume. We had people walking around with us. And actually, so these guys, we were playing around. That's Greg in this one, and this is Mark Panacho in this one. She came up to the booth before she made her appearance, and I had no idea who it was. Greg knew, because Greg spent a lot of time drawing her. So he knew who she was, and I had no clue. Because I was in the hospital, and I couldn't go to the... This is funny. So none of us, we were just stunned that we won Best New Product of the Show. Ballet guys were kind of looked down upon it at Williams when we first got there because we were the poor company they had to buy. You know, so when we won Best New Product of the Show, we were stunned, and I think so were all the Williams people. So Greg quickly that night made up a sign. But I put this in here because he spelled equipment wrong. But I guess it didn't matter because nobody noticed it until I pointed it out. This is what happens if you party too much the night before because your game won Best New Product of the Show and your wife says, "Come on, you're going to go out and show me Vegas, get your ass out of bed." Dr. Dude was at the same trade show that was it Data East then that had their first Simpsons game? And they had Matt Groening there, so I'm just showing this because I got Matt to sign my flyer. It's a great game, man. Your pal, Matt Groening. And this is something you don't see very often. This was the Whitewood for Dr. Dude. This game was originally going to be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Roger was going to do that license, and we talked about it and thought about it, and I thought I could have fun doing it. But management decided they thought the theme was too juvenile at that time for us to do. So Greg and I had to come up with something different. I wanted to do something with some evil bad guy, and I just had in my head Dr. Doom, and Greg said, no, you can't do that. There's a comic book character called that. So Greg, I think, actually came up with the theme of Dr. Dude instead of Dr. Doom. And so he turned out to be this hip guy that you had. So the idea of the game was you had to do all these, accomplish all these things, get a heart of rock and roll, and whatever else there was to become cool. And this was also the first game that had my, I called them jumper bumpers at the time, the caps that were attached to the ring. I was just trying to get more motion in the game, more free motion without having to use a coil or something. So those are the original models that we had made of things. And then I built a, we didn't call it this at the time, but that's the molecular Mixmaster model. I made out of model kit parts and sheet styrene and stuff. And there is further along Whitewood. This had the production bumper caps on it, and the sculpted pieces. And that's me and Greg at the trade show. And Greg drew that big sign. And he's a very talented artist, I think. Greg's now doing, maybe you all know, doing video games for Midway. Then came Party Zone. All these party influences were Greg's doing. I think he was a frustrated party monster. The designer with the game at the show. Whoops. Well, the first one was just the flyer. This is like a prototype flyer that Greg made up, just sticking things together for an idea for what the flyer might look like. So there's an example of the final flyer and what Greg's first thoughts look like. The waterfall in the back glass was interesting. We didn't plan that. We didn't know anything about that stuff. While we were doing this game, some guy came in off the street and says, look, I got this great new process that I can print foil, and if you run chasing lights, it looks like it's moving. And we thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Can you do a waterfall? And he said, sure. So he came back with a waterfall, and that's how that happened. There's always a lot of happy accidents, and there's probably even more unhappy accidents. John Yousey, of course, did the artwork for this. This is John, right here. A friend of mine was named John Colville, lives in Australia, so written on the cliff walls here is Wet Willie Colville run these here rapids in 1893 or something, but it refers to my friend John. And then the Bigfoot character was based on me. All the ugly monsters in the games were based on me. And then this truck back here, it's a 1952 Dodge panel truck, and I bought that truck in Reno when I was there for the Blackwater convention. And I still have it, and it's still not finished. That's the topper for Whitewater. This is the only Whitewood picture I have of Whitewater. That's Greg, of course. Mike Boone, who did the software. Scott Slomiani, who did almost all of our dot matrix work. And Chris Graner, again, at the bottom. And it's the Whitewater. And then, to finish, I just found this on the internet. So I thought, oh, that's a good shot of my Whitewater pin game. I better save that. Then I did Demolition Man. This is at the trade show where Steve Ritchie's Star Trek was introduced. And they had Star Trek characters walking around the show floor, including this Klingon guy. He's the one on the left. And at the same show was this Borg character, which was a girl named Tracy Coco. And as I talked to her, she appeared on the TV show every week, the Star Trek TV show every week, as an extra. She was always in the background, usually like this, pushing some buttons behind the bridge. And she also had a bit part in the movie Demolition Man, just a walk-on part in the very beginning, and that was it. So we contracted with her to be in our Demolition Man promo video, and also then to appear at the trade show. And she was also the female computer voice in the game. And this is where the handles came from. The light blue one in the middle is, I carved it out of building insulation foam, just to test it and see how it fit. Then we had some wooden models made and bolted them on. And that's how those got started. You seen the movie? Has anybody seen the movie? It's kind of a junky movie. I didn't like the movie, but that movie was all about weapons and shooting and guns and holding weapons. And to me, I thought, oh, that might be a good feeling if you feel like you're holding weapons when you're playing the game. So that's how they came about.
Well, whose idea was it to put the trigger awards in?
Probably the programmers. And it was probably a way to encourage people to play with the handles, too. So for the video, I built a little set. And then we also took this set to the trade show. That's just a photograph of me working in an empty spot in the factory, building the set. This thing on the right was my cryogenic generator, and I made it out of a terrarium. And then this is like the finished version. I still have these panels sitting in my basement. We had fun doing this video. So there's my terrarium with a sump pump well upside down on the bottom. And there's a hubcap over there on the right with some lights behind it, and some landscape deck lights, those three. We used a lot of smoke and fog on that video shoot, and that's me filling up my cryogenic generator with smoke. For some reason, I took a lot of shots of Demolition Man, more than any other game. So at the trade show, we had Tracy, because she was the computer voice and she was in the movie, and we had this Sylvester Stallone lookalike, what I thought looked amazingly like Stallone. And he's a building contractor in Chicago, and he moonlights by being Stallone, or he used to anyway. Indianapolis 500, my next game. I don't have any pictures of this game. But we went to practice. Don't ask me what the year was. When I was working on the game, we went to practice before the game came out, and we got to stand right behind the pit wall and take pictures. And this, I like this picture because it's Mike Boone and that's Ori Leyendyke walking by in the background. I just thought I had bad luck with both Elvira games, didn't I? Because the first one I crashed and spent in the hospital. The second one I got laid off before in production. So maybe I won't do the third one. Here's how Scared Stiff started. I went to a custom car show in Chicago and I knew Elvira was going to be there. So I went there and I talked to her and asked her if she'd be interested in doing another game, and she said sure, she'd love to. So then later, Greg and I went back and presented it to management, and they weren't too thrilled about it, but we kept pushing, and we finally got it to go.
What were their objections?
Because we already did it, and people said, we already did it, why do it again? But Greg and I wanted to do it because Elvira was such a, Party Monsters was such a surprise success, and they didn't sell enough of them, so we thought we should do it again. And this is another one of my favorite pictures. Some of you might know who this guy is, but he was my favorite car customizer in the 60s, and he was at the same show, Big Daddy Ed Roth. He's no longer with us either, but he was a wild guy. Greg and I had the hardest time coming up with a name for this game. It took us forever. So we were having so much trouble, we just ignored it for a while and just went on with the game. This is one of his first art concepts. It had a staircase, and on the staircase was going to be different elements that you had to complete on the play field to light up and fill up the whole staircase. And at the top of this staircase, just for fun, he stuck Elvis up there. Artists are always doing, sneaking in and doing and putting in crazy little things. Here's a color version of it. He took Elvis out because he was getting a little more serious this time. So we don't just get an idea and draw it and it's done. We go through a lot of development and thinking and heading in the wrong direction.
How many months would you spend and how many people in the game?
A game is usually 9 to 12 months. And how many people? At Williams, we have a lot of people. We have a lot less support at Stern now. But at Williams, I had a mechanical designer, and he usually had two draftsmen, and then a programmer, and sometimes a support programmer, an artist, and the dot matrix guys, and then there was always one sound guy, usually. I think Scared Stiff had a couple of sound guys. Paul Heitch started it and did some of the sounds, and then Dave Zabriskie finished it. Dave Zabriskie was my favorite sound guy, too. I thought he was phenomenal. He went to IGT, too. I don't know if he's still there or not.
So, did you know they were putting all the birthdays and other Easter eggs in there?
Programmers? No, nobody can control that. And besides that, they're nocturnal. They work all night long, and you're not there when they're there. So they do a lot. They sneak a lot of stuff in. And I'm too busy trying to get the game finished and get into production that I don't care.
So the secret passage thing, is that something you like to do, or is that just a happy accident that a lot of
you... For whitewater?
Well, you got a whitewater, you got it in the...
I got it here. You know, some of those things are, I got some room here, what am I going to do with it? You know, I don't like to waste space and have a big area where there's maybe room for a ball to go through, so if I can figure out a way to make a ball go through there, then I like to do that. Because real estate is, a lot of real estate is rare on a play field. So you try to make the best use of it you can. So now we're getting more serious, and we finally, how we came up with the Scared Stiff name, Greg and I were just, is Elvira and the Spooky Spider, Elvira and the Haunted House. We were stuck on Elvira and the, probably because of Elvira and the Party Monsters. And then we just decided, let's just call it Elvira Mistress of the Dark. And we both said, okay, good, we're done. And we went in and we talked to Mike Boone and told him, we're calling it Elvira Mistress of the Dark. And Mike goes, that sucks, I don't want to call it that. We were so depressed. And we went back to my office and we were sitting there looking at each other. And Greg's very creative. He looks up at me and says, Scared Stiff. And we said, that's it. So this is where we started to incorporate the spider and Elvira, and notice she has both her shoes on. And I said, Greg, it's going to be a lot sexier if you take one shoe off. So he did. And in this version, you can see there's a screwdriver, some other things. It's one of our little perverted end jokes. There's a flashlight. The flashlight's lit, and then there's two batteries laying there. So I'll leave that to your imagination. And Elvira thought that was funny. She was okay with that. So another version, screwdriver's still there. And the cat was a picture of my cat, Chelsea, who wasn't really black, but Greg turned her into a black cat. And then this is the final version. And the screwdriver's gone. It's replaced by a frog. But everything else is pretty much the same. This little Luna Cheese, that was Elvira's nickname for her daughter. And probably everybody knows that story. Black Thursday, which was the day I and two other design teams got laid off. So I was thinking about the game during development, I went to Disney World and I rode Pirates of the Caribbean. Wow. Anyway, so after the ride, I found this pile of skulls in the store that's after the ride, and I thought, oh, maybe I could use that in my game. So I bought it, and I took it home. I drilled out their eyes and stuck LEDs in there, and everybody loved it. It was pretty cool. And so then here's the original sculpture, and then this is the final version. So we didn't make a mold of this. We had, I think Dave Link sculpted this. We used him and Jerry Pensler at the time, and I think Dave Link did this one. And you probably all know the story about, for cost reasons, they took the LED. We had a special board made that was like bent. You could bend the board and put it in shape and shove it in the back. But for cost reasons, they took it out. And that's what it's supposed to look like with the LED eyes in it. And that was going to be a whole feature in itself, I think tied to the Deadhead feature. Now if you buy the kit, it's tied to the something. Yeah, that's right. Here's, for some reason, we went through several versions of the monster skull. Sometimes we get too anal about things. But to me, it looked like chicken feet on his head. I didn't like that, so we did another. So that's one of the, or this is a, that's a clay sculpture. And this is another clay sculpture that Jerry Pensler did. You can see there's way more detail on these ribs than there is in the production game. Also, the skull is different in this area, too, I think. But I got my red eyes this time. And these were just test shots, just to see how the molds worked. And this was done by Northern Plastics. And they would just use whatever stuff they had laying around. And that's the final version. So it looks to me like we simplified the head and stuff a lot, probably to make it easier to mold. Took out a lot of the detail. And that's Cassandra Peterson, Elvira. She loved doing the speech for this game. We had our own sound studio at Williams, and so she went in the sound. She had a good time. She loved saying all that risque stuff. and that's shortly before Black Thursday. That's Greg Ferraris, who's that? Help me with Indy 500. Mark Buena, yes. Mark Buena worked for Newman Haas Racing Team, but he was a real pinball guy, and he really wanted to get into pinball, so he came in as my assistant on Indy 500. So he contributed a lot to that game because of all of his racing experience. And then me and Cassandra and Mike Bloom, the programmer. I wasn't at this show, but there she is having fun playing the game. Now we're going on to Pirates. I have a few pictures of Pirates here, but this Disney sent us. Disney was so difficult to work with. Everything on Pirates was a separate license. The only thing we got was the movie, and all the actors were separate, all their speech was separate, all the script was separate, all the music was separate, and so that's why there's not a lot of stuff in that game. Contract wasn't signed until shortly before production, and of course we had all our sound and speech written and recorded, and they axed like two-thirds of it. But this is what we used to model our treasure chest on for the game. This is where the idea for the Kraken monster came from. This was a sketch from Disney. And I just took this and cut it out and rearranged the tentacles and stuff and glued them onto plastic, and that's where our Kraken, that's how we developed the Kraken. Of course, I wanted it to be three-dimensional, so it would look really cool, and again, we ran out of money. That game ended up being way over budget anyway because of all the stuff we had on it. Whitewood for Pirates. That's ship is sculpted, the sails weren't done yet. The spinning disc was in there. Here's I like to make my ramps minimal. I don't like the ball to look like it's hidden and confined inside a ramp. At Party Zone, I did a lot of high banked ramps, and there were some problems with the balls coming off, but to me it looked more fun with the ball flowing freely around the ramp. So I was trying that on Pirates. I did as minimal as I could, and the ball was flying off all over the place. So we stuck these wire rails on this whitewood. The whitewood. This is in Dwight's office, Dwight Sullivan, who did the software for this game. This is a whitewood with some rules added to it, just drawn on in marker. Stern doesn't let us keep the whitewoods, they tear them up. We used to be able to keep them at Williams. Over here on this side is a work table. And I took a picture of it one day because it's filled with donuts and donut holes and potato chips and pretzels and tons of programmer food. This is a very early whitewood, and Ray Tanzer one day decided he was going to make a ramp for it, so he built it out of welded steel and plastic sides, and it was terrible and it worked like shit. And this is a cardboard cutout of the ship. It just helps us visualize to see what you can see behind it and how things are going to take up space on the play field. And the spinning disc is back here. Everybody hated it. I'm tall, it didn't bother me. And I thought, well, when the sails go down, you can see the ball on the disc. So I thought you should have to earn that, but everybody hated it. They wanted to see the disc without the ship being in the way. So we moved that all around. I elevated the disc.
Evan, did you mention the drop targets on the chest?
Yeah, original. Oh, yeah, look, there they are. I wanted to bring back inline drop targets. There was a patent on those for years, and that's why you haven't seen them for a long time. Bally had a patent. That patent has expired. So I wanted to get them in this game. You would bash on the inline drop targets, then bash on the door of the chest, like the Scared Stiff chest, and then it would open, and then you could shoot into it. But all that stuff got costed out, too. Oh, and down here on the left was my parlay feature. I had another picture I meant to bring to prove to everybody that Disney spelled parlay wrong, because we had it spelled correctly with an E, and they insisted that it be spelled with an A. So, this was my parlay feature, where maybe you would have a chance to save yourself with some jet bumper action on the bottom there. That was in one of the outwings. So that got costed out too. So that's all my pinball stuff. I designed a game called, when I was out of pinball for a while, I designed a game for skee-ball called Tower Power. It's in a lot of Chuck E. Cheese places. It's a redemption game. And I really had fun doing that game because I really like aesthetics and making things look cool. And I built this model out of junk I had laying around, deodorant jars and some old Valley posts, because I think those posts look real Art Deco and real cool, and some Scared Stiff globes and some ignition wire covers, a model rocket tube in the middle. Just, and then I painted it. So that was my concept for Tower Power. And then I built the first one out of plumbing parts and stuff. And this is how the final version came out. Two more pictures. This is when we did Gilligan's Island, Bob Denver came in to our sound studio. And that's Bob Denver talking. And I think this is my last picture. A whole group of us with Bob Denver, who also is no longer with us anymore. But this is John Yalsey, me, Bob Denver, Ward Pemberton, Doug Watson, who did the artwork for Demolition Man, among a lot of other games. Greg Freres, Linda Deal, I think she's most well known for Circus Voltaire, is that correct? Jack Hager, who worked on the Carnival video game, and he's also the one that sculpted the first skull for Elvira and the Party Monsters. And then Pat McMahon, who's a wild and crazy Irishman. And that's it. Do you have any questions about anything, or any games, or anything I might or might not remember? Well, thanks. Thanks for coming, everybody. Yeah. And I want to say I feel really fortunate and thrilled to be back in pinball again, because it's just something I love doing. It's just it's a fun product to design, and I was out of it for 10 years, and I missed it every day of those 10 years.
Dennis, do you think after you got laid off, before Scared Stiff under production, did you think you'd ever get back to pinball, or did you write it off at that point?
I wrote it off at that point. I didn't even play pinball for years. I had enough. I was done. But I'm thrilled to be back.
What was your favorite game to work on?
My current game. You know, the old standard answer. They're all my favorite, because when you're working on it, it's your favorite game. Because you really try to do your best on every game.
Yeah. What game are you working on now?
My next one. So, thank you.